Yes, now we can go. Wow. Welcome. It's very nice and a little bit scary to see you all here. And I'm especially happy to see a lot of old friends and also that a lot of people that are new here. Anyway, I'm going to talk about how to write code. And in particular, a question that's been bothering me for a while, and I know it has bothered a lot of other people, is what is good modern C++? We've done a lot to the language over the last 5-10 years, and a lot of people have ideas about what it is to write good C++. And lots of people ask about it. So this spring, I started a project trying to make some guidelines for how to write this, and turned out that other people were on to the same kind of idea. So some of us are trying to provide a useful answer. And one of the things that is important here is that we would like for the like to help many people. There's more than 4 million C++ programmers. And if we come up with a solution that can be handled by 200 language experts, we've failed. So this is an attempt to be able to help a lot of people. And another way of seeing it, that we have a great language now. And it's a modern language. It can do really nice things that we couldn't do 10, 20 years ago. C++ 11 is good. C++ 14 is better. Both are in widespread production use. These are not toy languages. And from what I see in the standards committee, C++ 17 is even better. And there's the technical specifications, like file system and concepts and such that are rolling out. Things are happening. So I know from experience, from widespread experience, from industrial experience, that C++ 1, anything is easier to write, easier to maintain, runs faster, and can express more than older C++ styles, and with less code. This is a fact. Well, it's also a fact that very few people do it. That is, maybe you know 1,000 people that write such modern code. Maybe you know 10,000 people, but that's a very small, tiny fraction of the community. We have to do something better. People are writing C++ in really archaic and foreign styles. Also, you go on the web and you'll see every little so-and-so trying to be a language expert and discussing the subtleties of R-value references or something like that, which doesn't actually matter in most code unless you are writing a high-performance library for use of others. So they're all trying to be language lawyers and are getting lost in technical details. So basically the idea is, doctor, it hurts when I hit myself in the head with a hammer. And the obvious answer is, so don't do it. And that's what we're trying to do. There's a quote by me. I guess one shouldn't quote oneself, but it's a good quote. Within C++, there's a smaller, simpler, safer language struggling to get out. I think I said that in 94, 92. It's a long time ago. It is even more true today than it was then. We can simplify the code, we can maintain efficiency, and we don't have to limit what we can say. These are important things. This is C++. It's not a slow, specialized language for a particular application. So let's get it out. Let's get it out now. A lot of people's solution to getting things better and simpler is to invent a new language. But that's not now. If you invent a really good new language now, large number of people will be able to use it in 10 years, if you succeed. The success rate for new languages, especially for general purpose programming languages, is very close to zero. So let's do it now. And I want to use those compilers. I mean, have you seen what the compilers can do with your code in terms of optimizing it? doesn't matter which compiler you're using for a modern compiler and sort of standard hardware. It's amazing. I mean, I'm not sure I could have done it if I had 10 years, but they did. This has grown up for a long time. This doesn't just happen for a new language, unless you can hijack the C++ code generation phase, which is a fair game. So I'm going to look for coding guidelines, provide guidance to people who wants to write modern C++, whatever that means. And I know that just telling people what to do doesn't quite work, so you need support by tools and libraries. And again, we want generality, we want performance, we want simple code, and we want portability. I don't want to be tied down to a particular hardware, a particular operating system. Those are the games. So, I think we can do it. And I think we can do it. I know that I can't do it alone. I know that, well, there might be a genius somewhere, but I think I know that no individual can do it. And no single company can. It will be captured for what that company was particularly interested in, and you couldn't trust it over time. People explained that to me a long time ago to ensure that I took part in the standardization. So please help. I'm going to say a bit more about what help we would like and who we are and things like that. So the initial work started, there was a project out at Microsoft by Herb Sutter and friends. I started something at Morgan Stanley. CERN has joined in and contributed a fair bit. And there are things available. It's there. You can find it on GitHub. I'll give you the URLs towards the end. There's guidelines, a lot of them. There's a little support library, which is some very simple classes that mostly map into standard library stuff. And if not, it maps straight into portable C++. Portable meaning Microsoft, GCC, Clang on Windows, Linux, and Macs. And Macs, yeah. And there's an analysis tool that will be shipped by the guys at Microsoft that wrote it next month, and we hope to have ports available later, maybe November, I don't know. I mean, you know, software projects sometimes suffer a slight delay, but we are planning for it. It exists, so I'm not saying anything in this talk that's science fiction. And it's the MIT license, so it's as open, as free as you can get it. And there's more talks about this. I'm sort of going to explain what we are trying to do in fairly high-level terms with some examples. Herb Sutter is going to talk more about it. Gabby Dos-Reyes are going to talk how it ties into some of the work being done in the Standards Committee for writing better code. And Neil McIntosh, who wrote the tool that we're working with, is talking about static analysis and some of the classes. This is all this week. Now, there is a problem with coding rules, with guidelines, which is, have you ever seen one you really liked? They may be necessary, but it's like medicine, it doesn't taste good. So, we all hate coding rules. Usual caveats and thanks to the people who has made this less true in particular cases, but basically we don't like it. And one of the reasons is that coding guidelines tend to be written to prevent accident, to keep novices that are not as smart as us from doing stupid things. So it's a long list of don't do this and don't do that. And, well, I don't like such lists, and I know most of you don't either. And they're very often written at the start of an organization where people, it's a little bit uncertain about what they want to do and they want to avoid problems. And rules tend to focus on low-level things. I mean, do you use camel case or underscores? How many spaces do you use to indent? This is all very interesting. It could even be essential for an organization, but it has nothing much to do with how you get quality software. At the higher level. How do you actually recognize a good piece of code when it comes and you see it? Also, a lot of them are simply sets of restrictions. Don't use overloading, don't use exceptions, don't use multiple inheritance, don't use casts, all kinds of rules like that. Some are good, some are bad, some are good in some particular environment, some are not. And really, there's a lot of bad advice out there. I mean, there are guidelines that tell you that you really should try and write Java. Well, if you want to write Java, I know how to do it. Don't try and stop C++ programmers from writing good C++. And C with classes, it was really cool in 86 or thereabout. That's a long time ago. A lot of you weren't born then. And there are people who think that really the world came to an end in sort of 78 when KNR1 came out, and they might accept a few things they got from C++ like function prototypes or const, but basically you really should write code the way you do it in C. Really dumb idea in my opinion, but we'll get to that. Also, coding rules get outdated. I saw recently a recommendation to use a coding guidelines, which was a really good guideline. It described how to write good code in about 1988. It hasn't been updated. That's a long time ago. And so they become a drag. A lot of codes are specialized for particular application areas, like I helped to write a set of guidelines for hard real-time software, flight controls. These are very nice guidelines for that. But then people try and use them in other areas. And you know, one of the rules for flight is that you don't use new after you take off. And you never use delete. So maybe these are not the most appropriate guidelines elsewhere. Other guidelines have similar kind of biases and constraints, and people tend to forget them. And a lot of them are very long-winded, and you really had to be a language lawyer to understand them. I looked at the rules for how to use pointers in Mistra C++. I mean, that was miserable. I couldn't understand all of those rules, and you can't follow them, really. And a lot of tools doesn't have very good, a lot of guidelines don't have very good tools. And they have platform dependencies, da-da-da-da-da, and they don't produce guidance. I really like to emphasize that telling people what not to do is less helpful than telling them what to do. So let's do some good guidelines. Comprehensive, browsable, for modern C++, for the moment, first of all, let's ignore legacy code, let's ignore old stuff, let's write the rules for what we would like our code to look like in 5 to 10 years. And then we'll deal with how to do the transition, how to do it incompletely when we have to. Gradual adoption is essential. Prescriptive, teachable. One of the things that holds C++ back is there's a lot of bad teaching material out there. Some of it is very old, some of it is backward looking, some of it is trying to maximize the appeal by dumbing it down and things like that. So a set of guidelines can also guide teachers to how to teach it. Flexible, of course, because it's a huge community. I mean, we cover just about everything that's being done in computing. And of course, non-proprietary, we couldn't possibly do this with limits. So, let's see. There are some high-level rules and there are some low-level rules. The high-level rules are there to provide a conceptual framework for everything. They're sort of philosophical in nature, and they're very useful. Like, you have to express the ideas in code. Compilers don't read comments. And you use ISO standard C++. Yes, there are reasons for using extensions and such, but we're not going to deal with that. That will be for particular restrictions. And we want static type safety, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a philosophical framework here. The problem is that, again, compilers and even programmers don't really get philosophy. It means you have to transfer it into something that can be understood in detail, in context, in a piece of program, and used. So for that reason, there's a whole bunch of low-level rules that basically guides you through the mess of alternatives and features. And the lower-level rules, things like use a tstar to designate a single object, not an array, and prefer initialization to assignment in constructors. These are easily checkable. You can have a tool that tells you when you violate it. Always initialize an object. Compilers these days do, but it's a good rule, and we can do even better with external tools if we have them. So basically, that sort of shows the way through the wilderness. And the tools provide feedback for programmers. It also helps unify style. I mean, if I look in a piece of code and I see a string, if I know it's a standard string, I know a lot, and it helps me. I don't have to go back and read the manual again. Getting a more unified store a more unified style helps getting code written quickly, helps me read code, understand code. And one thing you should understand is that the rules are not meant to be minimal and orthogonal. Textbook writers and such spend a lot of time trying to make sure that it fits in the minimal amount of paper or something like that. This is not what we're up to. We're trying to have the most helpful, and we can have a large set, and basically the tools will tell you when you fall over the edge. So the structure of the rule is simple and structured. No naked new, for instance. It's a rule, and there's reference numbers. People love reference numbers. It also means that you can search for them. It means that you can refer to them in error messages, things like that. And never, never tell people what not to do without giving a reason, or what to do without giving a reason. So every rule, the first thing that comes after the rule itself is a rationale, a reason. And then comes an example, because we by and large don't understand abstract text. We need a concrete example or more. If it's a don't do this rule, there should be an alternative. Never tell people what not to do unless you give them an alternative. Fairly simple to say. A little bit hard to do sometimes. These rules are evolving and will evolve for a long time. There's references to other things. There's notes, things that we just felt was useful to say. And then there's supposed to be some long discussions at the end where you discuss a set of rules and set of reasons and such. It's a bit weak just now, but that's the idea. Sometimes you need more as an explanation than what fits on about these many lines that fit right on your screen when you look at them. So that's the discussion. So that's structure. The general idea is that people who have tried to subset the language has by and large failed. The things you really want to get rid of, like bad uses of pointers, bad interactions between inheritance and arrays and things like that, if you just ban everything to get rid of the problems, you can't write decent code anymore. Yes, I want to write high-level code, but how do I do that? I do that by having libraries that allow me to write high-level code, and they're implemented using the low-level code, because otherwise you can't get the efficiency and the portability out of that. So the general idea is not just a subset. First, we provide a superset. We have ISO standard C++. We have parts of the standard library that we recommend, and the rest you can use when you want to. And we have something called the Guideline Support Library, which is a small set, small as in less than 24 little classes and things, and really is very small, that is added. And that way we can say the messy, dangerous bits, don't use them. We have provided abstractions that are elegant and efficient that allow you to not go there most of the time, for most people, all of the time. Once you build that superset of the language plus libraries, then you subset and you can get rid of a lot of the crud. This is not a brand new idea. I wrote a paper about it sometime more than 10 years ago. And so really what we want is not some neutered subset of C++, which is a lot of people who tried. We want C++ on steroids, on the other hand. So more of the good stuff. And so the rules rely on the libraries. You can use any standard library, of course, but the ones that rely on, things like standard library classes like vector and unique pointer, and some guidelines things, array view. This is when you have a beginning of a sequence and end, and you work in that. Not null, you can say that, say, a pointer shouldn't be null. I'll get back to that. And so there's rules for using the GSL. Never transfer ownership by a raw pointer. So the idea is, if you see a T star, it points to an element. You're not supposed to delete it, because it just points to the element. Somebody owns it. That's it. And if you want to have something that cannot ever be null, and you still want a pointer, you can use a not null of that pointer type. Now, there's rules that encourage you to use higher level abstractions, but these here I chose to show how you can deal with traditional old style code and improve it. Don't pass an array at a single pointer, I mentioned that. So basically, I was asked to guess what this could do. And I don't actually think that it can do less than, say, double your productivity. This is a big, big, big claim. But I think it can be done. Look at a good programmer working on a modern code base, and look at the same programmer working at a 20-year-old code base, or 10-year-old code base. Also, look at a medium kind of programmer and see what it takes to become a great programmer. You need support, you need time. We can lower that time. So I think we can imitate experienced programmers through rule sets that we try and enforce. And so we can eliminate huge classes of errors. And so simplification is important. If we can have simpler code, maintenance improves. Consistent style speeds up learning. And basically guide people away from the deep, dark corners that they love so much. I mean, so many programmers spent so much of their time looking out the most complicated code and the most complicated rules of the standard. And I'm shaking my head. I mean, this hurts. Why do you do it? And emphasis on avoiding waste, and that can improve importance. And basically, my guess is that every large organization community that's doing this will need to have some special rules for what they are doing. So I'm talking about what I call the core guidelines, things that potentially help everybody. And I think most of you will want extensions and places, and some of you will want restrictions too, because there's some of the recommended rules that doesn't quite fit in your world, or maybe it doesn't fit there for the next couple of years till you have evolved your code a bit. And don't compromise performance. Performance is a really important aspect. So I don't think I've gone mad. I think we're actually attacking what we know to be the common, most serious sources of errors. And basically get rid of errors. I mean, no resource leaks, that's good. We know how to do that. Eliminate dangling pointers. That's supposed to be very hard. I'll show you how we do that. Eliminate out-of-range access. That cannot be done without a few runtime checks. A few. If you just check everything, you're dead meat. But a few can be done, and we have some suggestions about that. And tool support is essential. A lot of this humans are not actually very good at. I mean, you look at a million lines of code, and your eyes glaze over. And you check for a particular kind of error or mistake in a million lines of code, 100,000 lines of code, 10,000 lines of code, and you get very tired and your concentration wavers. We need tools. And the support library helps by simplifying the rules. And a lot of it has to do with reinforcing the type system. We can do better than we did in 78 and 85 and thereabouts. So let's look at the core rules. Basically, we have to start somewhere, so gradual adoption will be the way most of us will go on. If we write some brand new code from scratch, not using anybody else's libraries, then you can probably follow all the rules today. That doesn't happen very often. So I see gradual adoption being necessary, and I'll focus on the core rules. So no leaks, no dangling pointers, no type violations through pointers at all. We know how to avoid leaks. We just root every object in a scope, RAII kind of stuff, standard containers. New and deletes disappear into the abstractions. I mean, this is nice. When I see a delete in application code, I think there must be a bug somewhere. Why? Because if there's one delete, there probably should be more, and there probably may even be too many. So basically, new deletes disappear into classes, and when you then see a new in application code, you think there must be a problem here, because if there's a new, there should be a delete somewhere, and if there's a delete somewhere, we know from experience we make mistakes. So we don't do that. But this leads us to what I think is the worst nightmare problem, dangling pointers. And they're so easy to get. Here we have a function f that you give a pointer and it deletes, say, delete to that pointer. I mean, that may be right, it may be wrong. On my rule of thumb, it's very suspect because it's delete in application code. Here's g, makes an object, calls f, and then it uses q, which happens to be the pointing to the object that was deleted in f. This is how you scramble memory. The rules will make sure that you don't do this, and it will take care of some of the most subtle and difficult to find bugs. And we have to do this because if we don't, we can damage type safety. I say this object is an integer. You do this example, and the object, my integer lies at the place where your object was, and you scramble it. Memory safety, of course, because we are not using memory as it's declared. And resource safety is compromised because you can destroy things that are lying around there. You can do double deletes or no deletes. So we have to solve this problem to get type safety, to get resource safety. And we're going to eliminate this by a combination of rules. And I mean eliminate, get rid of it, verifiably. And we distinguish owners from non-owners. I mean, if I have a pointer, am I supposed to delete it or not? I have to know. Assume raw pointers to be non-owners. We have many pointers in our programs, far too many, but let's assume they're all innocent. They just point to an object. They're not supposed to be ownership. And you catch all attempt for a pointer to escape into a scope that is outside the scope of what it points to. It's fairly simple. And anything that holds an owner is considered an owner, so all of this works recursively. So basically, this is a simple rule. We have some pointers, they point to an object. That object is held alive by an owner. This works recursively. The object happens to have an owner pointer inside it. That's what we have destructors to constructors to construct, destructors to clean up. And what we really have to avoid is that pointer there that has been passed below the object's owner in the stack. So when we delete the owner, the object is not there and people are still referring to it. This must never happen. So if we can assure that, we're a long, long way to eliminate pointers. This is not a new rule. I mean, if you look at the standard, it says that you shouldn't do that because you get undefined behavior. The point is, how do we actually get there? So here's that dangling pointer thing again. First of all, the rules will catch the delete P. You had an innocent looking pointer, X star. That's not an owner. So the rules will tell you not to do that. Tools that enforce the rules will tell you that code is bad. You go back to the G, it says, well, new of X obviously produces an owner. So assigning it to just a plain old pointer is going to be wrong because this could lead to a leak. The fact that it also, if you do that, will lead you to problems with exceptions is another matter. So basically, we'll never get down to the problem because you've already been trapped by the simple rules twice. So we can look at how we represent ownership. And basically, you can pass a, you can mark every owning point as owner. For a long time, I was thinking that we needed a bit to do that, a sort of a dynamic model. We just took every pointer and marked it whether it was an owner or not. And I've had models like that before, like you put on when saying whether it's a const or not and things like that. The point is, this is useless. It is very good for thinking about problems, but it is useless for actually doing it because, well, it costs time or space to have that extra bit, or time and space. It means that the code that uses such smart pointers, fat pointers, and such are no longer ABI compatible with the existing code. It runs slower than ordinary C or C++. That's not acceptable. And we have to rewrite all our code for it. So the idea is that you just have a thing in the type system called an owner that the static analysis tools can use. And when I talk about pointers, I mean anything that can point to an object. So if we can handle it for pointers, we can handle it for everything: references, containers, smart pointers, and things like that. And so we are going to eliminate all dangling pointers. Yeah, that was that. Oh yeah, down at the bottom you can see the definition of owner. It's just an alias. We've marked it as an owner. Humans can read it, tools can read it, but your linker doesn't care. So everything is working as before. So here's how we can use it. We can use an owner to improve our implementations of higher level abstractions. We want to use higher level abstractions like vector instead of array. And we just mark that in this particular case, one of the three pointers inside the implementation of vector is an owner and the other two aren't. There's the owner, keeps it alive, the other two just points into it. That's sort of the general use you'll see a lot. And only if we are dealing with pointers directly do we use owner. So there's an F that takes an owner, and let's try and call it. I call it with an owner that'll transfer ownership. I call it with a non-owner, that's bad. I delete one of the owners, that's good. I delete something that's not an owner, that's bad. We can catch it. And this is just marking, and the static analysis tool will tell you when you did something that wasn't good. I mean, an owner has to either be transferred to somewhere else or deleted. The code will check whether you do it. That's it. And owner is a low-level mechanism. You don't want to fiddle around with that level all the time. But having owner allows you to do two things. It allows you to implement your... It provides support for the implementation of higher-level abstractions. C++ is a language where you can design your own containers, you can design your own smart pointers, etc. Now you get a little bit of support in how to express this and not make so many mistakes when you do it. And furthermore, there's ABIs. If somebody really says they want an int star, you don't have to give up all your checking to be able to use that ABI. So let's see, what else do we have to do? We can now handle ownership, now we have to handle dangling. Don't transfer a pointer to a local where it could be accessed by the caller. Yeah, okay, let's look at the example there. I am returning something. I either return a pointer to a local, not a good idea, we all know that. Compilers have been able to catch it more or less consistently for the last 20 years. Then I'm returning a pointer to something I just created on the free store. That's fine. At least it's sort of fine because it didn't mark it as an owner. But as far as dangling pointers, it's not going to dangle. And there's finally the pointer that was given to me then obviously I can give it back because it came from my caller. And those are roughly the only three cases. If we can handle that, we can stop pointers from escaping down in the bottom of the stack and outlive their owner. So basically, catch it for all kinds of things, pointers, references, etc. And that's so fine. So here, let's see. We need to classify according to ownership to work here, because look at that function f there. It returns a vector of integers. And inside that vector of integers, we have put something that's an owner, something that's a pointer to a local, and something we got from our caller. This we can't handle the ownership of. I mean, it's just mixed. That's bad code. It's asking for trouble, and it'll be rejected for mixing it. In code, we would have to try and deal with it, and we can't, because really ownership has become mixed. When we pass it out, all the information about who should delete what has gone. The only way of doing that is actually to have something like a big bit vector of that tells you which should be deleted, and or you can sort of hope, or you can have pointer. You can change it into unique pointers to represent the ownership. But basically, don't mix ownership in containers, because in current code, it doesn't work too well, and in this code, it'll be caught. So there's of course many other ways of misusing pointers and such: range errors, dereferencing null pointers, and so I'm going to go a little bit about that further like that. And I'll notice there's a couple of principles here. Some of the rules are amenable to static analysis. Some of them are amenable to sort of hygiene. You can look at it and give it as a guideline. And some of it really requires runtime checks. And we want to minimize runtime checks because we want to run fast. So here is one of the tools that we are providing. It's similar to a proposal in the standards committee. This one here, though, do rewrite, where for some reason I don't understand at all, the array view being proposed in the standard is a read-only structure. But anyway, here we have a common style. We call with a pointer and a count. This is my least favorite kind of interface. Least favorite because it is so error-prone, and least favorite because it is so common. So a lot of the errors there. So I assign 9 to P of 7. Is that okay? We have no way of knowing. The information is not there. And I can make a loop from I to N. Let's hope N really was the count, and let we hope that the count is right. That's fine. So instead, we provide an abstraction, which is array view, a beginning, and a count or an end. It doesn't matter. There, we could check at runtime, if we wanted to, whether A of 7 is valid. And if we don't want the checks, we could have them only in the debug mode. And we can now write a range for loop that will work. Notice that there's no N to get wrong, and the code has actually simplified, and it's become more checkable. We are lifting the abstraction just one little bit. And so we can look at some calls there. I call it for A of 100. I have to say A, and I have to say 100, even though I already told the program that there was 100 element in A. And if my finger slips on the keyboard and I write 1,000, all kinds of bad things will happen. If it's a variable, it gets more interesting. For an array view, well, you could just say it was an array view, or you can rely on a conversion of an array to an array view. F just sucks up that array, makes it into an array view, having the size deduced. And if you are going to call it with a value, it's fairly easy to check. against the array if the value is there. If not, you're on your own as often. So basically, this follows the idea of making simple things simple. An array view is really roughly the same as a p comma n, but we can use it easier and we make fewer mistakes. Null pointers deal with it simply by saying what we mean. The problem is, today we don't say what we mean. I have an f of a char star. Is it all right to call it with a null pointer? Where does it say so? In the documentation. Okay. Compiler doesn't read documentation, and neither do I when I'm in a hurry. Not a good thing. When I'm implementing f, should I trust that my users follow the rules or not? Should I test? If I test, I test too much, because that's waste resources. If I test too little, we crash. There's all kinds of things about that. So one way of dealing with it is we use a non-null. Currently, that's a class that will test whether it's non-null, but a lot of that can be eliminated and it could be debug only. So f on null pointer is obviously an error. I told them that f took a not null. And a little bit more subtle here, where if you pass a variable that is a null pointer, that requires checking. But now when we write f, we don't need to do the checking. Okay, so it's a simple small class. It makes the code more explicit. It attacks a particular, specific, well-known problem. There's many ways of attacking most problems. This is the one we chose for this. So basically, we go after bugs. We provide type and resource safety. And now we can go after other problems, logic errors, performance bugs, maintenance hazards. There are rules going there, but they're not as complete as the things for extending a type system. One thing we noticed is that there's a lot of overuse of smart pointers. I noticed a lot of shared pointers being used simply to return a value from a function. So the use count goes from 0 to 1, then 1 to 2, then 2 to 0, and 2 to 1, and then to 0. And all we did was to get something transferred simply, because people didn't trust ordinary pointers, and quite reasonably so, because ordinary pointers might dangle. Well, wait a minute. We just solved that problem. So we have to rethink the way we're using smart pointers, shared pointers in particular, and my feeling is that they're overused. A lot of the protection in shared pointer when used in that way is just overhead, because once the bugs have gone, then you don't have to have that use count anymore, but it sits there forever counting whatever you call and pass a smart pointer. Now, with smart pointers, with dangling pointers eliminated by tools, you don't need to do that. So I'm going to show a little bit about that. So here are the alternatives in the standard. We can take a T star, and that doesn't deal with ownership, it's just a pointer. Just use the pointer. With the rules here, we know that f of T star will not delete T. The rules will stop that. It just points to something. If we want to transfer ownership, we can use unique pointer. If you really want to share ownership, we can use a shared pointer. But if we look at the T star, it's familiar, and it's very general. If I have a shared pointer, I can take the pointer out of it and give it to this F. I don't have to do anything fancy. No dangling pointers, and basically, think about pointers, simply things that designate things, and it works. So here's an example. F, G, and H has been written using the different kinds of pointers. And if I make an F shared, if I make a shared pointer to X with make shared, then to call F, I have to get the pointer. If I'm calling G, we have the overhead of using pointers. And the age, I really had to modify, because if I pass the ownership in, I have to pass it out again unless I want it to be destroyed up in age. So we can keep things simpler now. Simply use ff int star, such as we always did. One question I've had quite reasonably is, could the rules be enforced by the compiler? Some could, some can't. On the other hand, I would like to use these rules now, and I would like to use them for all the compilers. So yes, it would be nice if the compiler builders would use some of these rules, but please be careful. Don't have false positives. People hate false positives, and that destroys the whole system because people start suppressing things and not worrying it. And furthermore, an external tool is not just useful across the span of compilers. It also can tolerate a few more false positives, and it can handle changes more easily. You can use a compiler enforced rule only if all the compilers you use enforce the rules. Having an external tool helps. So let's start with an external tool, and if the compiler writers get interested, that so much the better. And the other things, why didn't we just use the standard only? Because the standard currently, as it stands, doesn't have all the rules we want for the standard, for the GSL, the guideline library. We want to use things now. And it's tiny, it's portable C++ 11. It doesn't depend on other libraries, freestanding. You don't have to include a whole ball of wax with things you don't need. And basically it's similar to, though not identical, to Boost and experimental components. There's actually a good chance that they will become standard in some form or other. But we're not going to wait. This is too simple, too easy. Let's get going. It's on GitHub. Some of you accessed it yesterday and the day before. And we use the standard library. Now, one of the things that you find with every sort of reasonably comprehensive and reasonably good rule set is there's too many rules. We need to help novices, experts, people who build infrastructures, applications, da-da-da-da-da-da. There are no way you can remember all of those rules. Furthermore, I think I have 350 by now for this, and we're nowhere near the end. There's too many, you wouldn't even go and read them all. And more interestingly, you do not need most of those rules. Most of you do it anyway. We don't make that mistake. We learned that 10 years ago, so that rule exists, but gee, everybody knows it. On the other hand, the rules are for people that don't know it, the novices. The people who are casual users, the people that has 15 years of experience on a different kind of code base, things like that. That's what rule for. And you can't sit wasting your time programming, trying to remember the rules and looking them up. No. Furthermore, you will never get there because the rule set is extensible. As we learn, we add rules to it. So if last month you wrote something and you fulfilled all the rules, you try it again this month, we'll hope to catch you once again with some new rules that verified, principled, validated by experience will be helpful. And you know, you shouldn't know the rules. The tool knows the rules. My ideal is you run the tool and it drops you right in there showing the rule on the screen. What was the rule that was violated? Where was it violated? What's the rationale for the rule? What's the example of how bad it can get from problems like that? And here's what you should do instead. That's what I would like to see. And so there's too many rules and it doesn't worry me. I want lots of rules. And here's the set of the classification. There's the philosophical rules. Basically the conceptual framework that cannot be validated, but it's really good if you sort of understood what being said there. If nothing else, you'll know what we were thinking when we wrote them. And then there's all kinds of things, interfaces, functions, classes, class hierarchies, there's supporting sections, naming and layout, that's where everybody goes, and then they say they don't like the rules we wrote. That's fine, never met anybody that liked a whole set of rules. People say they want camel case. Sure, I hate camel case, but apart from that, was that C-sharp camel case or Java camel case, right? There's just too much of it. There's rules for performance. Some people are interested in performance. There's different kinds of performance. Some of these rules you can go up and look at today, now, but some of the areas are fairly weak. The guidance for the standard library is weak. The discussion of concurrency is fairly weak because we haven't had enough time. This was a project that, in fact, it started in sort of March, April, and we're shipping now. This talk is trying to encourage you to help to make it a community, large community project. It's not sort of the kind of polished academic thing with lots of proofs and Greek letters that this is the right thing. No, this is an attempt to do something major and something interesting. This is not unambitious. We're trying to scale to the 4+ million C++ programmers and a few billion lines of code, while not breaking the zero overhead principle. So the code will be better. No type errors, no resource leaks, no dangling pointers, We go after our least favorite bugs. And so basically it's full speed ahead, and we expect some rough waters, but if you're thinking of sailing ships, you can actually sail faster if there's a storm going on. So that's what we're heading into. And basically, we actually aim to change the way we write code. And that means you. What would you like your code to look like in 5 or 10 years? And really, honestly, if the answer is just like what I wrote yesterday, there's some failing of imagination here. We really want to make change, and that can be painful. It's not easy to modernize code. It is not easy to modernize a large code space. It is painful. But, you know, if you don't do it, you'll have the same pain from your existing code that's now 10 years old in 5 years, and it'll be 15 years old, and it's not going to feel any better. And gradual adoption, of course, is necessary for this. The idea of taking 5 million line code base and saying, okay, we'll just change this, and after the weekend we'll use the new version. Probably not. And we will not all agree of what the code should look like, so there will be some discussions. Part of it will be that not all code should look the same. I really don't want to work under the constraints from my flight control software when I'm writing an ordinary application. It's just too painful. On the other hand, there'll be discussion about what is common and what isn't. If you look at the rules, you'll find that some of them are somewhat controversial. And that's fine. I just chose what I'm pretty sure is the right answer. And if you don't agree, I'm willing to argue with you. And so that's going to be fun. And basically, help wanted, look at the rules, help review them, help suggest new rules, help suggest better explanations of the rules. Currently, there's only 2 editors of this, me and Herb Sutter. That is too low a number, and so we need more editors, but you'll have to earn your right to be an editor. That's a crucial position in the community. And so the current status, about 350 rules, and there's a GitHub for it. We put it live, I think, Friday, and we're already getting pull requests. And the guideline support library tested on Clang, GCC, Microsoft, on Windows, Linux, and Mac. It's available now. And the first tools should come. Microsoft is shipping something, I think, next month I don't know their shipping schedule, so I can't be precise. And we hope ports to the other systems are coming right after. It's written as fairly intended portable C++, ISO C++, so that should work. And yeah, we need help. And this, from my perspective, means that the basic C++ model is actually complete. I was going for the idea that you could get perfect resource safety and type safety. And I've been trying to get there for many, many years. It was the ideal from day one, and I knew we couldn't get there any time soon. I think we are there. And by the way, if you look at my definition of resource safety, you'll see that it's really not very many languages that can claim that. And for static type safety, not very many languages can claim that. No range errors and dereference errors without serious overhead. That's more languages can claim that, but it's still hard. This is not unambitious, as I said. And we now have concepts, so we can deal with templates in a more reasonable way. So, with all of these problems solved from a research point of view, why didn't I just go back to academia and design a new language? That's, after all, what most people do, right? It's a cool thing to do. As I said earlier, competing with C++ is hard. I put these tool chains up there to show what anybody with a new language is up against. Competing with C++ has, over the years, not been a winning strategy. And it would take time. And furthermore, certainly going into a new language could fracture the C++ community, which is about the last thing I want to do. So we're going for something that can work now, the guidelines and tools, and hope to get there. So basically, with that, I will switch to questions. And I left the outline of the guidelines up there. By the way, the what's it called? The guy there is Hercules, fighting the Hydra. This is a bit like what it feels like. We have a many-headed monster we have to fight, and there's a nasty tendency of getting more heads as we make progress. So, thank you. Sure, is there a microphone somewhere? Okay, I'm back. So the question is, why do I mark owner rather than non-owner? And yes, we discussed that. And my conjecture is that there are too many hundreds of millions of lines of code that uses T-star to mean non-owner. And I really don't want people to write very many owners. I want the owners to disappear into abstractions. So, as for now, there are many more non-owners than owners. In the future, I expect there to be 1,000 or more than 1,000 times as many non-owners and owners in code. Because pointers are now getting safer and you can use them more freely. So, I think I got the owner-non-owner default correct. Maybe the first time in the history of C++ we got a default right. But I'm pretty sure this one is right.
Question here.
There.
Hi. So I had a question about owner T. And one thing I was confused about, is owner T just something that is used at compile time, or does it use any sort of like runtime overhead, or might it?
It's something that's used only at compile time, and it does absolutely nothing. It is something that guides a user or an enforcement tool to see what you're supposed to do with it. In particular, if you're not an owner, you're not supposed to delete it. You're not going to pass it to an owner. If you are an owner, you had better either give it to somebody else who's also an owner, or delete it. A tool can verify that. It doesn't do anything. you can encapsulate an owner into a, say, a unique pointer, and then just use it because it does the deletes and has the right semantics. But the owner is a low-level marker to help static analysis. And I didn't mention it, but I should. Static analysis is local static analysis using very few rules. It's going to be fast. It's not one of these n-cubed algorithm over all of your code. It's local fast stuff, local rules.
Quick question. What happens when you move from not null?
What happens when I move from not null into what?
Like whether you're passing it or you know, you move from it, and then what was the remaining state remains becomes null, right?
If you move from a pointer, it's just a copy, so it doesn't become null. If you generalize it to smart pointers and such, it will have to have the appropriate semantics. I don't know if the implementation is there. You should ask Neil McIntosh on Wednesday. He is the one that did the last version of the implementation, which I haven't read yet. He made some improvements last week. But basically, no, you cannot violate not null that easily. Question down there somewhere?
Yeah, I'm just intrigued by the supporting section N, the non-rules.
Yes. One thing that we found was that there are popular common wisdom that happens to be false. And so we found that rather than finding a lot of rules and then people could deduce that their common knowledge, their myths were violated, we better be explicit about it. So it's just some rules that that says, no, we're not doing this, no, we're not doing that, so that you can see it. We want things to be clear and upfront. I'm getting a bit numbskull, otherwise I could have come with a good example. Oh yeah, one of them, like, use shared pointer everywhere. Yes, if you have infinite time, and if you want to risk things like circles and such like that, yeah, but we want to say that's not what we're doing. And so rather than scattering that knowledge all over the rules, which are basically a knowledge base, right? It is called out. This is not what we're doing.
Question here?
So one of the things that I have the unfortunate pleasure of dealing with is C APIs that take your things like your least favorite pointer and length pair and things like that. Are there plans to have guidelines for how to deal with those interfaces and make them safer in C++?
I have no plans of dealing with foreign systems. That will not be in the core guidelines. But I wouldn't be at all surprised, and I'll be very happy, if somebody would write a section that says, how do you interact with /CLI? How do you interact with Java? How do you interact with Python? I'd really hope to see somebody write those sections. Quite likely, they will be of the form that you can do this static analysis to make it simpler. You can have this tiny, tiny little set of classes for doing the transmission. Here's an analysis of the cost of using, say, the Java native interface or something. But these will be special extensions that you can use. And we are providing a strategy and a format and encouraging help. I mean, the example you picked in particular, I would not be qualified for doing. So we need more expertise.
Question here.
How is the GSL work related with the concepts?
Sorry, I didn't hear a word of that.
How the GSL work is related to concepts?
How is GSL related to concepts? The GSL has a section dealing with concepts. It lists about 20 concepts, most of them from Andrew Sutton's Origin implementation of concepts, his standard library version, and a few from the Eric Niebler's range proposal. And there are rules that basically says use concepts. And so when you write a template, the rule says you should just use concepts. Now, of course, you can't, because the overwhelming likelihood is that your compiler doesn't have it yet. On the other hand, we're planning for the future. My hope is that next year all the compilers will have concepts. And so my idea is that you actually write currently with requires and the concepts. There's a set of concepts we recommend, but you can have your own if you like. And then you put // in front of it. And next year, when your compiler gets updated, take away the slashes. So you will get your design in place. You will have to think about concepts, but you can't actually enforce it till next year. I think especially when we come to concurrency, there will be several other rules that you can't actually follow till the standard catches up with where we think the standard should be. Yes.
How would you compare the guidelines described in the book C++ Coding Standards, and is the C++ Core Guidelines supposed to supersede that book or be complementary to it?
Yeah, I didn't quite hear all of it, but you're asking how it relates to Herb and Andre's book on coding standards. Now, let's see. Herb and I has had some discussion about this. And my comment to Herb was, this is great stuff, but mostly it's meta rules. That is, it's fairly high level and philosophical in the book, and it's meant to be read. These are guidelines. Most of it, 95% and rising, are concrete, simple rules in context. And a book like the C++ coding rules are good to read. It's roughly philosophically in agreement with the rules here, but the rules are much sharper, much more detailed, and I would say you can see that it's a different decade. Things have been modernized, and Herb wants to say something about that.
I'll just say you'll see some of that text already in Appendix C. We actually started from there and then decided to reboot it along the lines that Bjarne said, but we've got some text from C++ coding standards, and you'll likely see some more.
Yeah, so it looked more like the coding guidelines to begin with, and then it looks actually more like those little advice sections at the end of my books. And if you look at the format, it looks more like the JSF++ rules, which was the last rule set I did. But this has a lot to do with making things practical, actionable, tool supported.
Question here.
I was just wondering how it's possible to achieve type safety and memory safety, avoiding all the complexity that Rust brought to the table just with a library solution.
Could you say the last bit again?
Avoiding the complexity that Rust brought to the table and only with a library solution.
Yes. How do we get the type and resource safety without going into the Rust complexities? Basically, by relying more on static analysis. Basically, by wanting to stay very close to existing good C++ that could do it, rather than providing language features that people should use. People have again and again tried for those aims by creating a new language with facilities for exactly saying things. Cyclone was an early example of that. And they tend to accrete complexity as they try to get more general. And so we go the other way. We have C++ with all its generality and messes, and then we try to stick to the working subset. From a philosophical point, it's quite difficult. The aims are the same. Rust has the advantage of not having 30 years of background and a few billion lines of code to deal with, but C++ has some experience and user community. So if we went this way, putting in lots of language features, I think, would be the wrong answer in the context of C++.
How does the static analysis work with async code?
Works with what?
Async code, like callbacks.
It does. I can't go into to detail here. Again, go to Neil McIntosh's talk. At some point, we depart from the symbol. I think I have three rules for ownership and three rules to avoid dangling pointers, plus a fourth for concurrency. And then we have to go into the details of, we are looking at this function, and we have to do an analysis. And that basically becomes roughly a symbolic execution that takes care of ownership and dangliness, whatever you call that property. And each function is done, and you can record what it was, how it was related to that. And so when you call a function, like in a callback, you know what the called function do. And that the work, the backbreaking work that has been done in that area is going through all the combinations of control structures and kinds of pointers, references, da-da-da-da, and make sure that you've covered all the cases. I think we can guarantee you some bugs in the early versions. We try very hard not to have them, but you know, it is complexity there. I think from a fundamental point of view, if we're dealing with a toy language, we would be there.
Hi, I work on computational physics, so I found it very interesting that you had somebody from CERN also involved with this effort. And so my question is that of all these guidelines and pieces of advice, is there something particular which applies to scientific computing at CERN and other places?
One of the things we have been doing is to try and branch out. You saw the three organization mentioned was, let's call it an infrastructure company, a financial company, and a scientific computation company. And I actually spent the previous week at a CERN workshop about the future of scientific computation at CERN. Also, some of the people that are listed in the acknowledgments, but not with organizations, a friend of mine working in the embedded systems industry. We need to get a very broad view of it. Then we find what we consider the core, and then we have extensions. I'm sure we'll see extensions for hard real-time, for kernel work, for scientific work, for low-latency work, things like that. We want breadth. We want input from many, many industries, and we want to have as much as we can in the core, but not everything can be in the core. And so the other areas will be covered. I must say I spent most of my time roughly on I/O and storage and concurrency, so the actual computation part we never got to. Somebody will get there. There is a section called arithmetic, which is basically empty. We know we have to get there.
A question here?
So my question's related over here.
There.
To compile time checking of thread safety. And it builds upon Herb Sutter's talk from a couple of years ago about using mutable and const to actually enforce compile time thread safety guarantees on const correctness.
Yes.
The place where we found this really fell down, though, was with smart pointers and things like owned pointers, because you can always basically throw away constness by a pointer dereference. So we went and actually made our own smart pointer classes that actually enforced this, but was this a good idea? Was this a bad idea? Do we need guidelines on basically ensuring thread safety
I could not hear the middle part of your talk, of your question. Let me try and answer it and then hold on to the phone, to the microphone, so that for the bit I miss. We have a concurrency section. I mentioned it's one of the weakest ones, and it has, I don't know, 20 rules, that kind of order, but they're not specific enough. And we need more, and we need help from the community. I specifically called that out. There are problems with interaction with smart pointers, but roughly, we can use a shared pointer to keep things alive if you have things like detached threads. And we can also use scoped tasks so that they won't join. The things will not go invalid till they join. So I expect that in that area there'll be some fairly simple rules. And if you have kept your thread alive with a shared pointer, or if you have scoped it, pointers will actually work. We also need to use some of the sort of research techniques for statically detecting deadlocks. We don't have any rules about that, but we know the research, and we're pretty sure we can get deadlock avoidance rules into this. But we need help. If you relied on me, it would take roughly forever. I've got too much on my plate. So I encourage people to volunteer. That's one of the areas we know we have to go. Did I answer the whole question?
It was more const correctness of smart pointers themselves, basically. Why does a smart pointer dereference remove constness? Was that a specific decision?
I don't know,
decision?
And I don't think I should answer it right here. Now we get into too great detail. Yes?
I was just wondering, with the not null type, why not just suggest to use a reference instead, since that's also a pointer
because when
null.
You are doing things like object-oriented programming, you want to rebind. And so if you have a pointer that can point to something and then change the point to something else, it can't be a reference. Now, I want smart references. I have a proposal in the standard process, in which case you could get it, but it still wouldn't be references, it would be smart references. But that's a fundamental reason. Also, one of the fundamental reasons that you need references and pointers as opposed to just plain scoped objects is basically object-oriented programming, where you point to an interface and you don't know all the rest about what there is. So we need pointers. References are not enough.
Question over here.
One of the things Rust did was it introduced ownership into the type system that's checked at compile time. Mm-hmm. My question was, do you see some of these guidelines or things like the ownership being something like a flag you turn on in your compiler when you compile your code that it's checked then and there, versus something that is just, you know, you run your compiler and then you run an additional tool to check it later?
I think for all of the sort of easily actionable kind of rules, I would expect and hope that compiler writers would get into the act. I especially appeal to the compiler writers for Clang. I know some of them are in the room. I hope there are some of my friends from GCC here. I would like them to help too. And Edison Design Group, I showed the strength of C++ by naming something. And I would really like if some of these people would help. But we have to be careful. We have to make sure that we don't start creating a dialect language. We have to be sure we don't get a lot of false positives. But yes, some of the rules are, in my opinion, and at my experience here, not having done it, something that a compiler could do without slowing down compilations. I really want fast compilations. Go to Gabby's talk about modules. So we don't want C++ to start running as slow as certain languages I should not name. After all, they do the favor of making C++ compilations look fast.
A question here?
Yeah.
Yes,
oh,
I just was...
there and then there.
Sorry. Yes, I just was wondering if there is a proposal to create similar standard guidelines for other languages like Java, C Sharp, Python, etc.
I hear that our guidelines trended sort of like number one on GitHub over the weekend. And I hear that there suddenly was a surge of guidelines for other languages when people thought it was a good idea. But to be honest, I don't care much. Those are their problems. I will deal with the problems I can deal with. The other communities will undoubtedly do their best. And if we come up with something that's pioneering, they will borrow it and forgot to acknowledge us. But I'm focused on C++. And as this guy said, obviously we need guidelines for interacting with other languages. This guy here who's been very polite.
Thank you. So I have a question. So to my understanding, the GSL offers owner, which can help us with things like pointers and problems like delete, for example,
yes.
Right? I'm wondering, is there some comparable static analysis helper object for stdthread and things like joinability or paths or detaching?
Currently, there are, as I said, not much support for concurrency, but we think it is possible. We think it's doable, and we are appealing for help in those areas.
But it seems to be a similar problem, right? When you also could scope this to the root of
Yes. I agree. But, you know, I could have waited a year or 2 years and then tell you about it. I thought it was a much better thing to say, look, we have what we think is a good idea. We have a start. Let's see where we can go with this.
What do you see as the future role of analysis tools like Coverity, for example, as the GSL gains more traction?
I hope for many tools. And I hope that I have consistently used the plural when I have mentioned tools and been specific saying our tool when we worked with what there is just now. And Coverity has made a very valuable contribution and has been able to do things because of their expertise and because of their scale and because of their revenue streams that other people haven't been able to do. And my view is that there's a place for open source stuff like we will be producing, and there will probably be a significant business in making things that are better than the default that you can get in the environment, going into greater detail, going into better integration, going into more specific systems. Basically, not that different from what we see today. There's an open source world, and there's a for-profit world, and both needs each other, because if the community is so totally unaware of the tools and techniques that is used in the advanced systems, it's really hard to have an advanced business because you have to convince people they need it. So I hope there will be a space for both.
Hi, quick question. You mentioned smart references. Does that mean that you'll be overloading the dot operator?
I would very much like to overload the dot operator. Look into the papers for WG21. And you'll find a paper by me saying how I think we should do it. We should have smart references just so like we have smart pointers, because people are using the smart pointers to do things that really are references, and that's weird.
I don't see anything on here about portability. Do you think that would be a useful
thing to have a set of guidelines about?
There's two answers to this. The first one is that we are sticking to ISO standard C++. And so you get the first level of portability there. We're not using extensions. For portability in things like checking the sizes of integers and that kind of stuff, it seems a good idea. I have not thought much about it. And I have actually been very worried about that particular aspect because there's guidelines that says, don't do this because, say, Microsoft Release 5 can't handle it. That was 20 years ago. And I really, really want to have the rules forward-looking. And by doing that, I will limit portability. I say, okay, the current rules really like a C++ 11 compiler. If you are on GCC 3.8, tough. Update. It's good for you anyway. And so I will not, if somebody wants to have that kind of rules, I think they'll find that backward-looking portability rules will disable most of the guidelines. They're forward-looking. So that's why I haven't gone there.
Question here.
Hi. I'd like to ask, why a separate library? Why not make it part of the standard library?
Why is the what?
Why a separate library might not make it part of the standard library?
I don't hear the last bit.
Why not part of the standard library?
Because it takes years to get things into the standard library. I emphasize I want it now. I mean, I was starting in March, April, and I was very impatient. I have this wonderful language, and people can't write it. I want something now. And you know, I didn't get it now, but you know, I think I'm going to start at an industrial scale next month. And doing anything in a community as large as C++ in half a year is interesting. The standard, yeah, we'll go to the standard and say, look, you have already got halfway there. How about, here's, we've got some experience for you. ArrayView is in the process. We're using the standard libraries, shared pointer, unique pointer, vector, but concepts we're getting next year, but the particular concept hasn't been standardized, but we borrowed it from proposals that are in the process. So we're very much keen on being part of that process. And I just didn't want to wait 2 years or 3 years. 17 is coming, but it's not there yet.
So I'm a C++ developer, and I'm also a C++ teacher. How do you see this kind of guidelines and rules and the ways they are presented help C++ to be more easy teachable to, let's say, students or newcomers to the language?
I really would like if some teachers would say, let's try and teach the guidelines C++. That is, write a course where you start from day one with the full analysis in, so that we could get a generation of C++ programmers that basically never had to be paranoid because of dangling pointers, things like that. So I hope it comes into the teaching community. I think it will probably first come into the trainers, the commercial teachers, and then hopefully eventually into the academic world. I mean, if I had infinite time, I would rewrite one of my simpler books to do it, but I don't have infinite time. As a matter of fact, I don't have very much time, so I don't think you should expect me to lead that charge. But let's get it into education. We can do much, much better. There's a lot of false myth about C++, and we are demonstrating them to be false with this.
Question here?
Yeah.
So we have a lot of legacy code at our company, and I'm constantly seeing people writing findif, rewriting removeif, rewriting reverse. I was wondering if GSL could help us find algorithms that already exist that are being written manually, and if not, if you know of anything that can.
Yeah. Again, there's a couple of answers to that one. The first one is that having a few million lines of such code is one of the reasons I'm so impatient and that we are doing this. And one of the reasons that, say, Microsoft and CERN are also involved is they have exactly the same problem. I think just about any C++ shop that has been successful since the 90s or the noughts will have this problem. And there is an almost empty section on how to modernize code, which basically boils down to be careful, use as many rules as you can, be aggressive introducing new rules, and hope somebody will build us some tools to help us modernize code. And I know people are already doing it. I hope that we can encourage them to do it further, and that the tools for transformation and analysis of old code will take the rules into account. And that people do that will feed into the rules. We want some feedback loops here.
Hi. I just wanted to say that thank you for making this a separate small library apart from any other project, because getting this through security review is going to be quick and painless.
I think so, yes. I have already heard it. Since it was released on Friday, I have heard of one case of people who's already done that. But remember, I work for a bank, and I am very aware of that problem. We really want it to be straightforward to use. Furthermore, I really think that some of the libraries are wonderful. There's lots and lots of stuff in them. But you know, there's lots and lots of stuff in it, and we don't use everything. My guess is that if you start using the rules, you will very soon be using almost all of the GSL. But the cheat sheet is on one sheet of paper, and the implementation is very small. As I said, Neil McIntosh will explain it all on Wednesday. And one thing I should mention, by the way, for the analysis part, the static analysis part, there's Neil McIntosh and there's also Herb Sutter's talk tomorrow that will go into that.
I have one question. Had you plans or do you think about using annotations to give the meta information to the static analysis? Because I think it would be great to distinguish the meta information from the real code.
Let's see. Are you suggesting that you should annotate the source language to get the checking? Yes, no? Yes, okay. We considered that. And I have observed that most programmers hate writing things. And they especially hate writing things that they think that the compiler should be able to figure out. And so we fairly deliberately try to minimize what you have to write to get the services. Owner, but you will not have to write it unless you're writing abstractions or you have messy ABI problems. Not null, because I couldn't see a way of not annotating it. Array view, because you need to get that information explicit that the count really is the count. And that's about it. There will probably be ways of opting out of checking. But I think by default, things should work, as opposed to requiring people to annotate everything. It's the same as Peter's comment, why is it owner rather than not owner? Because there's 1,000 times more non-owners than owners. Let's try and get the notational overhead low.
Yeah. Hi. You have a slide listing the sorts of involvement that you would like from the community.
I'm having trouble hearing you.
You have a slide listing the sorts of involvement that you'd like from the community. I was wondering how you foresee the process of evolving not just the library, but the rules themselves over time?
The way I imagine that is that we have some GitHubs, and for the GitHubs, we have to have somebody that approves it. I mean, every successful open source project has editors or maintainers or benevolent dictators or whatever you call it. We don't want all the rules there is, but we want a lot of input. So currently, we have two editors, me and Herb Sutter, and I specifically mentioned we need more. Even a mailing list needs some kind of approvers and such. So there will be a filter, and the filter exists, and it will evolve. Hopefully, we can set a good example on both approving things reasonably promptly, improving things based on input, and rejecting things that doesn't fit with the overall philosophy, and articulating the overall philosophy. And I think Herb wants to say something.
It's on GitHub. Open issues, participate in the discussion there. People have already been having doing that over the weekend, and it's going to be a popular indoor sport this winter.
No question here.
Hi, quick question. You mentioned briefly static type analysis and being a requirement. I was wondering if you could speak briefly on the future of type inference and its role in that in C++ going forward.
Try again. I didn't get it.
Curious if your thoughts on type inference, like auto for static type safety for C++ going
forward. That's a language issue. Now, there are things where we put assumptions in place, like a pointer points to one element and is not an owner. And so we infer things from that. But C++ has relied on some forms of type inference from templates, which are Turing complete and does infer a lot. And also, of course, just take the type from the initializer. But we're not touching the core language. For this guideline stuff, questions about how the language should evolve are almost out of bounds. But I'm trying. But don't expect to see any dramatic exchanges increases in type deduction in the language, and certainly not within the time frame of what we're talking about here. Oh, and by the way, I hope this stuff goes on forever, because I am worried about the coding guidelines that get put in place, get published, and are used 20 years later. We mustn't become a burden to the community.
While GSL looks like it addresses some of the technical tool support for coding guidelines, do you anticipate in 5 years we're still having the same philosophical debate about autocratic coding styles, and how do you use the GSL?
Yes, we will. I mean, people like to discuss things, and we will be discussing it. We'll be discussing which rules are good, which rules are bad, et cetera, et cetera. That's life. It'll go on forever. But I think we're making progress. I mean, if you look at the C++ community and the best C++ code, roughly every year in the last 30-some has seen improvements. And I want to accelerate that improvement. I don't expect to reach perfection.
So to that end, do you have a process of deprecating rules?
The standard now has a deprecate annotation you can put on it. For rules, yeah, sooner or later we will have to retire some and change some, because we will get experience and we will find that some rules are contradictory. In a rule set this large, there will be mutual contradiction, and we won't find them till a bit later. Exactly how we'll handle retirement, deprecation, change, I don't know. We have to learn.
Okay, one last question.
So you had mentioned the being forward-looking, and I know there are a lot of new things coming in 17. Are any of these rules, or can you give examples of any rules that anticipate 17 features, like do this because Concepts is coming, do this because Modules is coming?
We have rules that presupposes Concepts. That's one example. We have all the rules that says array view, which anticipates a version of the array view proposal passing. So yeah, we're looking ahead. I expect, as I said, that once we get into more details with the concurrency rules, we will be anticipating even more. And you know, if we anticipate wrongly, maybe we learn something, both for the rules and for the standards process. I really hope that this and the standards process will coexist to the mutual benefit. It's gone. I'm getting it's all over. I'll be around for the rest of the week, but thank you for now.